Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm Mark the Q. I am your host. I'm very privileged to have a pioneer. I mean, she is probably one of the first people to ever launch a advice column on the internet back in the 90s. I mean, this is way before it's certainly super popular by now. Her websites cover any range from relationship advice, also all the way to fashion. She has several websites, including, I believe it's leatherandlace.com. Is that correct, Allison?
That's correct. We have leatherandlace.com and advicesisters.com.
So I am privileged to have Allison Blackman on with us right now, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I looked at your credentials, and I just wanted to be – what? Go ahead.
No, sorry. I had my sound up too high.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Okay, cool. I was going to say that I found you by happenstance, and, I was looking at your credentials, and it was absolutely great to be able to have – and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I think when you first talked, I think via email – You were getting ready to go to Fashion Week over in New York, and I believe you're back from there as well. How was that for you to be out there during Fashion Week?
It's not my first rodeo with Fashion Week. I think this is my 27th or 28th season doing it. So I've been doing it a long time. It's changed a lot. I believe I was one of the first online people I'm a writer. I've written about half a dozen traditional books, but my website, advicesisters.com, and the other newer site, leatherandlaceadvice.com, are online, obviously. They're .coms. And for many years, the online community was kind of laughed at a little bit and wasn't really included in Fashion Week, and I was one of the first online people to do it. It was very different in those days. You could go backstage if you wanted to. You could talk to the best makeup artists and hairstylists in the world and really get to know them, and they get to know you. I'm a photographer, too. Mostly I didn't want to use Getty Images, which everybody else used, so I became very proficient and ended up on the photo riser as well, taking my own pictures. Over the years, more and more people in the online community wanted to be part of this. I think it was popularized a lot by Sex and the City, and, Carrie Bradshaw and her friends were in the front row, and look how glamorous it was. I mean, for the working press, it was nothing like that. It never was, and it still isn't. It's really hard work. I mean, we're toting around our coats and our bags, and we're not sitting in the front row, and we're standing on our feet, tired feet all day. We don't have a town car waiting for us at the end of the day to whisk us around. And then, the venues have moved a couple of times. The city does not really support Fashion Week. It's not a city event. It's a private event. And there have been a number of different sponsors who have dropped out. Now the CFDA, which is, I believe, the Council of Fashion Designers of America, don't quote me on this, took it over, and they have made it a little more exclusive than it used to be. And they've made it, it's all over town, which means that you have to choose very carefully what you go to see. You can't sit in a tent all day and go from tent, show to show to show. You have to slip yourself all over New York City with the snow, the rain, the traffic, the subways. I've learned, I no longer do it the way I used to, which was 21 backstages and maybe 5 to 8 shows a day. I only saw a couple this time. And I'm streaming video from, I streamed video from London, and I did some shows from New York using a video streaming service. So you could sit right home, and look. It's not the same as being there in person, but you really do get to see the fashions. And in the end, if what you're really looking for is to see what the designers are showing, you actually honestly see it better in video. I admit it.
Yeah,
but it's always
fun.
You get to see people that you haven't seen for a while, and it's nice.
I'm surprised that New York hasn't officially kind of, put in that moniker and kind of backed it, as it were, because it's such a big week. And it's an international, worldwide known thing that, you know, New York is one of the biggest places to have Fashion Week. So it's kind of unusual
for
them not to.
It's not for New Yorkers. You have to keep in mind that what Fashion Week used to be, and really still is a trade show for stylists and buyers. It really is. I mean, it became kind of like a circus where everybody could buy a ticket and sit in the front row and pretend they were a VIP. But it's really the time that buyers go to look for what they're going to be putting in department stores and boutiques, and stylists are looking for what they're going to be putting on their clients. I mean, it's a business, and while it's exciting, people used to line the steps at Bryant Park and even at Lincoln Center, tourists and curious people, New Yorkers and visitors, but it isn't their show. They couldn't get in. You know, you have to be credentialed to get in or have some reason to be there. So, I mean, in all fairness, it's an exclusive private event. There may be hundreds, maybe thousands of people who walk through those doors every week, but they're invited guests. It isn't New York City's event. And so while it brings people to the city, and I'm sure that it brings a lot of revenue in restaurants and transportation and hotel rooms and all that kind of stuff, it's a private event. I think in some respects I understand why they're cutting down and why it was such a free-for-all. I mean, at one point a couple of years ago, just about anybody could sneak into those tents, and they were serving liquor, and there were students, you know, coming in and getting a little rowdy, and people would spend all day there, and they were, it got a little crazy, and that wasn't really, it isn't a social event, it's a business event, and it's a serious event, and millions of dollars get spent on fashion, and it's a big business. So, you know, that people have to take it a little more seriously than they used to, and it's not so much fun. Well, I sort of get it. But for me personally, after this many seasons, I'm not as excited as I used to be. And every year I go, yay, it's Fashion Week. And by the end of Fashion Week, it's like, just kill me now. You know, I just want it to be over. Let me die.
I mean, yeah, the best example is out here in Vegas, because we have so many, like, you know, business-oriented conventions. This is basically, you know, a place where buyers and sellers come together. I mean, there's SEMA that happens every year. There's the CES that's here every year. So it seems like some of the best cards are revealed here. Some of the best new technology is revealed here as well. You know, so, and I think that the city does kind of, you know, see that as a business opportunity in terms of people coming in for business. So it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting take that New York has in terms of it versus where I'm coming from here in Helen Vegas, where it's more important. But, you know, it's a very interesting cycle, to say the least.
I have to tell you that I just came back from Vegas myself. I went to AVN, which, for your listeners who don't know, that's the adult video show. I wish I had been at CES, but I went for AVN, and it's at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. And basically, I mean, it's one giant party day and night in that place, and if you are an ordinary guest and you don't know that you are going to be there during AVN, you're going to have quite a surprise when you get there, because all manner of person is going to be walking through that casino and hanging out at the various venues. In I mean, basically, the porn stars take over Hard Rock. So it may be a business, but you can't keep the public out either. I mean, nor does anyone try to. It's not like there were bouncers saying, don't come into the Hard Rock Casino because we have a convention going on and there's porn here, you know. You could just walk right in. I mean, you couldn't walk into the convention floor unless you were credentialed or you had tickets. But you could certainly wander around the casino and the restaurants and everything else. You couldn't do that at a Fashion Week. I mean, you couldn't get close to it. So AVN was interesting.
I would imagine as so. I've heard stories. Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. And you said you've covered this for quite a while now. I mean,
yeah.
Were there anybody that you saw, you know, early on that are right now big superstars in the fashion world that, you know, you were, you know, you kind of had your eye on, or you kind of saw that, you know, they have potential, or, you know, you even just knew that, mm-hmm. you know, knew them from the early days.
Well, actually, there's only one that comes to mind really quickly, and that was Christian Siriano, who won Project Runway, and I was there for his first runway show, his first big show, and it was spectacular. I was backstage, and I remember looking at him, and this poor young man looked like he was going to throw up any second. I mean, he was so nervous and so upset. And, you know, obviously he's sort of like a household name now. But quite frankly, when you are young and starting out, you don't go to Fashion Week. It costs you a lot of money. I can't quote an exact figure because I don't remember what it is, and it's probably changed. But it costs you thousands, maybe $100,000 to get up on that stage. Otherwise, everybody would show at Fashion Week. It's very expensive. If you want to have a real Fashion Week show, it's going to cost you. So young designers don't do that. On the other hand, one of the things that Fashion Week in New York has done is, particularly now that it's not all in the tents, is that there are satellite shows just about everywhere, in little warehouses in Queens, in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, just anywhere you could think of, and they invite journalists like me to come and see these shows. And these designers are maybe people just right out of, you know, the Fashion Institute of Technology, or they don't even have any training. They're just putting together a little show. And some of these people have talent, and they might get noticed and, you know, become famous someday. Unfortunately, with all of the big shows surrounding Fashion Week, you know, it's hard to get the attention of journalists. There's only so much time. But, you know, we have, New York has fashion shows. You can go out and do something every night of the week. And there is fashion and creativity and, you know, accessories and all sorts of things going on all the time. So, you know, even if you are unknown today, you can work your way up. But you would not be showing at Fashion Week. The only one that I do remember who had his first show was Christian Siriano. So,
well, that brings me to my other question here. With the advent of social media, I mean, you know, with the idea of, you know, and the idea of you know, the paparazzi, it kind of has escalated since the idea of social media and the widespread popularity of the internet. You know, we see a lot of, like, you know, celebrities wearing certain people's things that may not be, you know, your Ralph Lauren's or you know, your mainstream people. I mean, obviously that's helping some of these younger designers in terms of trying to break through into the mainstream.
That's particularly true, like, in the music business. I can't remember what documentary I was watching, but there was a documentary on hip-hop, and hip-hop fashion particularly has been like that, because if a rapper likes somebody's clothes and wears them, all of a sudden, you know, this designer can become big really, really, really quickly. So, yeah, if a celebrity picks up on something and starts to wear it, I mean, even I remember, I think Prince William came out of the hospital wearing a onesie or something, and it sold out instantly. I mean, if you're a celebrity or you're well-known, other people want what you are wearing or what you have. Unfortunately for designers, particularly when it comes to, like, the red carpet and couture, they will privately complain that celebrities take their gowns, don't give them back. I mean, they're worth, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. They wear them once or trash them, and that's it. I mean, sometimes it isn't worth their while to do it, the designer's while to do it, because, again, there's a lot of static out there. You know, you've got to really be, when Jennifer Lopez wore that plunging green gown that left nothing to the imagination, I think it was Versace. I mean, it became an instant hit, but Versace was already famous. You know, I don't know that social media always makes a star out of the designer. It makes the star famous, but not everybody. And that's the other thing. A lot of these things are aspirational or conceptual. when I looked at London Fashion Week, which is different than New York, New York is safer. It's more like ready to wear. It's more relatable. There's a lot of pretty dresses coming down the runway or nice-looking pants outfits, you know, that anybody could pick up and buy. But the London clothes were wacky. And you really have to look at it as a whole and pick one thing out of the craziness and say, I could wear that jacket, or I would wear that hat, or the shoes would look fun. You know, they're very conceptual, and a lot of these things are so expensive, the average woman will never buy them. As a writer and a reviewer, and this goes for almost everything I review, which is makeup and tech and accessories and everything, I have to remember that affordable, the word affordable means many different things to many different people. So a $600 handbag is affordable to a certain kind of working woman, but it's not affordable to a single mother of four. And it would be downright cheap to someone who wears Hermes Birkin bags, who wouldn't even wear a $600 bag. So, you know, it's all a matter of how you look at things and what's aspirational and what's, you know, influential in your sphere. A lot of the things that I see on the runway, I would never put on my body, but I can see how I could tweak it. And that goes for the hair and makeup, too. A lot of it's really extreme, and any woman who looks at the pictures and tries to copy them is an idiot. And I mean that sincerely. If you look like something right off a runway model, you've got to have your head examined, because that's meant to make a statement and to go with the clothes and to work with the music and the lights. It isn't meant to be worn in broad daylight to your work, you know, or even maybe
yeah.
to date night.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, you have to pay like $300-$400 even to get that kind of look, you know, proper. So, yeah, I absolutely
understand that. Well, I mean, for instance,
that.
I saw a lot of orange eyes, ringed orange eyes. Really, orange eyeshadow just doesn't look nice on anyone. I don't care what age you are. It just doesn't look nice. It looks weird unless you're going for Halloween or Carnival. You know, but you can take that orange and tone it down and wear it, or add a touch of it to show that you're modern. You know, you can modernize your look. I always say to women, because I review beauty products, and they're constantly writing me and saying, oh, you know, I really want this red lipstick that I've been wearing since 1970, but I can't find it. Do you know where I can find it? And I'll tell them, don't try. It's time for you to get something else. You know, if something's been gone that long, it's a signal that you need to update your look. So take the color palette or the tone and find something that's a little more modern. You know, you can't hold on to the way you looked in 1960 and expect it to be right, because you've changed, you know, and the products change with you.
And that reminds me, I mean, did you see the Ellen show the other day?
The which show?
Ellen?
No, I'm not home to watch Ellen, sadly.
Okay, well, she had a little thing where she was trying to explain the Oscars and, you know, what she felt about it, and she had kept on getting these breaking news alerts, and one of them was about you know, the exact same thing you were talking about, you know. Women, if you want a certain lipstick color and you can't find it, it's no longer there. Pick another one. that was basically it, so...
Well, I remember the famous selfie that Ellen did at the Oscars. I mean, that's a case of when social media works really well. But nobody remembers what anybody was wearing, and nobody cares. I mean, it was a moment in time, and it made Ellen even more famous than she was, because she was the one who initiated that selfie.
Yeah, it's
with
kind
Peter
of weird
Longo
because
and,
we're...
And, yeah. Do you remember
yeah,
that
yeah.
one?
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah. And she raised a lot of money for that, because she was being, you know, she was getting paid for as, you know, as many retweets as she could on that, and she made a lot
right.
of money. I think it was Shutterfly, if I'm not mistaken. Because it's kind of interesting you say that, you know, they don't necessarily care about the fashion on the red carpets, because it seems like that's all they focus on, like in the pre-show. You know, it's like, well, this person's wearing this dress, this person wearing this dress. And they're even I don't know if he still has fashion police going on, but they had that going on.
Joan Rivers, R.I.P., I loved her. But ever since Joan Rivers stop doing it. I mean, nobody really cares anymore, I think, because I think part of what made it, part of made what the fashion police and Joan Rivers and that what are you wearing on the red carpet so exciting was that she was funny about it. You know, I mean, she said funny things, and they, I mean, not to be hurtful, but, you know, they were somewhat truthful, and you can't take any of this. It isn't brain surgery, and people in this country idolize the Kardashians and reality TV, and, you know, I mean, I guess you could say that I'm a part of that, too, because I'm online, and people know who I am, and, you know, you know, I give my opinions freely, and I review products, but the fact of the matter is that in the long run, this is all very temporary stuff, and, you know, so you can't take it too seriously. It isn't like, you know, saving the planet or brain surgery or, you know, it's just fashion, and at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter who wore what or whether it looked good on them or not. It's a moment in time, and it's over for most things. Maybe Princess Diana's wedding dress or, you know, some things that have more permanence than others and people still refer to them. But most people really don't care what, you know, Tina Fey wore to so-and-so's, you know, party. You know, but next week nobody cares. I mean, and the style magazines perpetuate it, but I mean, after I always dread award shows because after them, I will get conservatively 75 to 100 emails before the show is basically over telling me what perfume they wore, what nail product was used, what designer they wore, you know, everybody's pitching them. And I mostly don't, I don't tend to. Personally, on AdviceSisters.com, we review beauty, fashion, and lifestyle, and tech and travel and other things. But I don't focus on celebrity. I think that there's too much emphasis on celebrity already in this country, and they don't need my input as well. I rarely will. I mean, I'll put up some fashion week, you know, runway pictures and so forth, but I do not cover what so-and-so wore on the red carpet. I couldn't care less. And I don't want my, if my readers want that, they can go to People Magazine or Style or whatever and get it there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, let's take some, because we got a little time left, and I really want to get into the leatherandlace.com and what you're doing
okay.
There. Can you tell us a little bit about how you started that website?
Yeah, well, actually, AdviceSisters.com started with my twin sister as an advice website, and we gave a head and a heart, like an emotional and a practical point of view for every question that was asked, and my twin sister died, so I'll just get the elephant out of the room, and then for many years, I didn't do the double take, two answers advice anymore. I just reviewed products and did other things, and then a colleague of mine said, I could do this with you. His name is Anthony Sabatini, and he's a man, not a woman. And I said, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm done with this. And he convinced me to start up a website again, and it couldn't be the Advice Sisters, obviously. So we started Leather and Lace Advice, named aptly for the Stevie Nicks song Leather and Lace, because my husband loves Stevie Nicks. So Stevie, if you're listening, my husband really would like to meet you in person one of these days. So, and Leather and Lace Advice basically uses the same double take, two views, but a his view and a her view. And what really interests me so much is that his view is so different than mine. Men really do solve problems and think about them differently than women. We do not, when we get reader questions, which is mostly what we answer, although we do some reviews and features, we don't look at each other's answers until I'm the editor, so I'll look at his when it's done. And I'm always surprised. I mean, I never would think about the way he thinks. I mean, you know, it's the other side's playbook. And I think he feels pretty much the same about me. And our readers tend to be singles mostly. I mean, ages about 20 to 45, but we have people in every age group and every type of lifestyle and couples too. And, you know, basically we answer the type of questions that plague people. You know, he gave me a gift and I didn't get one. You know, what does that mean? You know, my boyfriend hates my cats. He wants to have a menage a trois, and so I agreed, and now we're having trouble. you know, these kinds of things that are real, and that you know, we're not a sex site. We don't have porn on our site, but we do review adult toys, and we do have interviews with what we consider interesting, provocative people. And we answer questions from real people. So if anybody wants to send us a question, I should say also that the core of the question is kept, but nothing else, so that nobody knows that question is from a reader. And even if they think it might have been from that person, it couldn't possibly have been from that person. So we really value everybody's privacy completely, 100%. But anyone who wants to send us a question can. We have a contact form on leatherandlaceadvice.com. There is no charge, but it takes us a while to get to the questions, obviously.
Yeah, first of all, I believe it was Don Henley that was part of that duet, if I remember correctly. Was
yes,
that correct?
It was. She was in love with him.
It seems to me, I mean, I think it's, I don't want to say it's obvious, but it seems like most of the questions would be from women on the site, and obviously, but
No, they're not.
Actually,
no. I would say we have more men than women, actually. And most of the and they're about 50-50. They really are. I'm surprised, me too. But that's the way the Google Analytics shows it, and that's the way our questions come in. So, yeah.
Well, that's great to be able to see that you're having both audiences.
I think the reason is that we don't sensationalize anything. We try to be entertaining and amusing, but it's serious. I mean, you know, we're not therapists. We're people who have PhDs in the School of Life and Hard Knocks, and I've been giving advice online now for almost 3 decades, you know, a long time. And so, I've also given advice I've written advice columns in Taiwan. I've written them for India. I've written them in Europe, in New Zealand. I mean, the thing that I keep in mind when I write, no matter what it is that where I sit, who I am, isn't the rest of the world. I don't know who this person is, and I don't tell people what to do. I try to help them see the forest for the trees, but everybody's culture is different. Their socioeconomic background is different. Their intelligence level is different. So basically, you know, what I understand is that emotion is emotion, and heartbreak in Brooklyn is the same as heartbreak in Bombay. You know, it still feels the same. How you choose to solve the problem is different. So when we write an answer, we try to make it relatable to people of all cultures and ages. That's where the skill comes in. You know, everybody thinks they can give advice, and they can, maybe to their best friend, but not when you're doing what we do, which is working with people all over the world that we don't know, and we can impact their lives and do it positively or potentially negatively. So we take our responsibilities very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Bombay. I was just thinking off the top of my head about India and how they're going through a change right now. They're going for a social change in terms of, you know, it used to be the fact that women stayed in the in their parents' home until they got married. Now it seems like that with the evolution of these women taking jobs, they're moving out on their own and they're having their own lives now, and they're going out more, and that changes a lot in terms of, you know, what they are. I talked to several people about this. You know, a friend of mine's show had a couple of people originally from India, and I asked them about this, you know, the idea that this is changing so much in terms of that. And it's kind of interesting, to say the least. And, I mean, we could go into that a lot more further.
That's another show, I think, but we've answered questions about this. And to be brief about it, quite frankly, it's changed a lot, but quite frankly, when it comes right down to marriage, women are the modern Indian women still often go back to the arranged marriage, or they don't want to, but they feel compelled to do it. So while they're freer to do a lot of different things and get educated and have their own money, and when it comes right down to it, I mean, there are certain mores that are still difficult to surmount, and so they're causing problems, actually. You know, they're not just free to do anything they want, or they feel intensely guilty when they exercise that right. So women, as usual, are not completely emancipated everywhere. But they're working on it.
Yeah. I mean, we could go on another hour, and I know I've got another guest coming on, and I know that you, you know, you're obviously a little bit busy too. So, anything that you want to add, anything you want to promote coming up for you?
Well, just if anybody would like to visit our websites, they're advicesisters.com and leatherandlaceadvice.com. I'm on Twitter at advicesisters. I'm on Instagram at advicesisters. I'm on Facebook, Advice Sisters and Allison Blackman, and also we have a site on Facebook, Leather and Lace Advice. I think it's Leather and Lace Advice. I'm working on a book about the lives of rock and roll roadies, or band crew, if you wish. Anybody who's in the music business who wants to, you know, tell me their story, you can reach me on the Advice Sisters contact form or the Leather and Lace Advice contact form, too. And that's pretty much it. Maybe another time we can talk about dating in different cultures.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, like I said, we could go another hour, and it was an absolute pleasure, and we definitely will hook up sometime in the near future, maybe when you start getting this book going or whatever.
Well, it is in process now, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure, Allison, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Okay, bye now.
Yeah, thanks, Allison. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Allison Blackman, everybody, advicesisters.com. You guys can check out the fashion portion of it. Leatherandlaceadvice.com for you that are seeking advice, as it were, in terms of relationships as well. Now I get to welcome a guest that I absolutely love. I've had her a couple times on the show. It's been a while, though, since we've had her live on the show. She is a really funny comedian. She's also a writer and producer. She has quite a few shows coming up, and she really wanted to get back on my show again, and I'm absolutely happy to have Courtney Cronin on with us right now. How are you doing, Courtney?
Hi, Mark. How are you? It's great to be back on your show.
Yeah, I think the last time we talked, I think it was right after you got married.
It was, so that's been about 5 years. It didn't work out, unfortunately. But, no, I'm kidding. It's fine. We're still married. That was about 5 years ago. It's been 5 years. Wow.
Yeah, it's been that long. Yeah, it's probably been a pretty crazy 5 years for you, though, in terms of everything. How has it been in terms of it? It seems like, you know, I don't know if you've been doing very much stand-up at all. I know you're doing a lot of writing and producing and that end of the things. But, yeah, catch us up. You know, how's it been so far in the past couple years?
Well, pretty good. You're right. I haven't been doing as much stand-up, but I'm still really involved in Pretty Funny Women, which is Lisa Sunstedt's show. I do a lot of shows with her, and we do benefits, and we do a lot of sober room shows at Alano clubs and for AA, and those are really, really fun shows. And so I'm still really involved with the Pretty Funny Women organization and doing a lot of shows with them. And then here and there, getting really involved in the writing and producing. I feel like after you get a little older, for me personally, it's kind of like, I don't want to get dressed and go out. It's already dark out. Like, I know that sounds terrible. That's like, comedians usually don't get up till 2. So all of a sudden, I've become this like different version of a comedian where I'm not on the road anymore, but still performing in LA and still doing as many shows as I can here or back in Boston. But done a lot of shows in the last 5 years. There's been a lot of shows, a lot of TV shows, been writing a lot. There's a new show I did last summer in Atlanta that premieres on TBS on March 8th, which is next Tuesday, and it stars the fabulous Eliza Schlesinger and the amazing Adam Ray, two phenomenal comedians. I'm sure you're familiar with both of their names. Eliza was the first and only woman to win Last Comic Standing, and she's done a ton of specials, and she's on every show that has a comedian guest. She's been on all of them. She's really fantastic. And Adam Ray, another great comic, also a great actor. He's in the new Ghostbusters. He was in the movie Spy. He's crushing it. He's on fire right now. So the two of them together did a show, and it premieres next week.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of if Schlesinger. I think Schlesinger, does Schlesinger still do a radio show over on Sirius? I think she does.
I know she has a really popular podcast. I didn't know she had a show on Sirius.
Maybe she went off of Sirius and went to podcasting. It might have been that situation.
Okay.
Because I know, I know she was doing a show, but you know, I thought I heard it was on Sirius, and then maybe she left or don't. I'll have to take a look and see how that went. But very funny lady in terms of that as well. I mean, it's great to be able to hear that show is kind of going on. Yeah, she's very, very funny. I think she's, you know, it's been an interesting but 4 or 5 years since we last talked, because it just seems like female comedians have been getting a lot bigger. I won't say pop, but like they're a little bit more popular now than since I think we last talked. I mean, yeah, you know, what do you think about what's going on right now? It just seems like there always seems to be a very funny woman, always kind of trending and that as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's great. I think it goes in waves. You know, I think there's like these dry spells, which, you know, was perfect timing for me when I was doing comedy, because it was definitely dry for women then, for sure. And then all of a sudden there's this newfound thing, you know, and, you know, with Chelsea Handler, you know, these hot girls with, you know, with a big mouth and can get away with a lot more. And she like broke down the wall, I think, for a lot more of the edgier women comics who don't look like they're edgy, you know. And like a Natasha Leggero and Amy Schumer. Like, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful that people are paying attention to funny women for just being themselves. They're not trying to do what they think they're supposed to do. They're starting a whole new generation of comics, and, you know, audiences are so different now. Social media changed comedy a lot, in the sense that everybody kind of feels like they're good enough to write a joke or be a comedian, but the comedians like Amy Schumer keep coming back and reminding you, no, this is hard. This is a professional job, and this is why I'm where I'm at, because I'm really, really, really good at this, you know? So it's nice to see that. It's nice to see people who really worked hard, worked their way up, paid serious dues. She busted her ass and then got to where they are. I think it's great. I love it. Totally supportive. And Eliza, too, same thing with her. Like, she busted her tail. Like, she was on the road constantly. She's on stage every night. And it shows, and it's time that I think women, it's nice to see them kind of in the front of comedy right now for the first time ever, I think.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, one of my favorite female comics, besides yourself and Sean, of course, is Emma Banford, who I think is an absolute great writer. I think a lot of people don't get to see how brilliant she is in terms of being a writer. But yeah, it's great to be able to see, you know, some of these gals just kind of break out and, you know, make their way into the spotlight a little bit. So it's great to be able to, and it's something that it kind of broke that glass ceiling. You know, it used to be that mm-hmm. we didn't see a female comic get a TV show offer, and you know, sure enough, we've been seeing a lot of female comedians getting offered their own TV shows. Some of them have been successful, some of them not so much, but it's great to be able to see that as well. And it's great for you, because obviously being a writer, you know, there's always that demand to have writers in the back room.
You know, it's nice to write for a woman's voice too. It's so refreshing, because I'm mostly writing for men, which is great. I mean, it's fun. But I love when I get to work with a really funny woman and I get to, you know, write for her and write in her voice. It's a pleasure. It really is. And it's just nice. I think things are going really well right now. I think women can't, you know, because way back when that was a big thing is, I can't get a spot because I'm a woman, or they don't want to feature me because I'm a woman. It's like, can't really say that anymore. You know, it's like, if you're funny, you're funny. And it's finally, you know, happening where it's, if you're funny, you're funny, and there's no difference between the two. Because way back when, there were just a handful of women that, you know, were on top of it and smoking everybody and crushing it, you know, like a Rosie O'Donnell or an Ellen or Whoopi Goldberg, but there was no one else. It was like just them, at that point. Like the people that were sort of in their peer group were not as famous and doing as much as, say, the peer groups of the women comedians now. Like look at Amy Schumer. And then Nikki Glaser's got her own show on Comedy Central. That's great. You know, they all did a comedy special together. It's like the women are helping the other women comics. They didn't do that back then because there was only one spot available, really. And you kind of had to take it and sort of hold on to it because you didn't want to share it. But now they're sharing. And I think it's amazing. And I think that's why women comedy and women in comedy is doing so well right now, too, is because of the support of other women comics. It's completely different than it was 20 years ago when I first started. It was not as supportive. Women hated doing all women shows.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was, I mean, it seemed like right when we got Return of the New Millennia, there was a revolution. There was a revolution mm-hmm. in terms of where women were and what they can do. And you know, there was basically no boundaries for them anymore because they were fighting tooth and nail. I'm coming from the aspect I was watching. I cover a lot of female fighting, MMA fighting. Mm-hmm. And these girls, you know, initially they were exactly like the comedians. They were kind of just bumping off to one spot. They eventually got to the idea, hey, let's get band together, let's build this thing. And now it's this kind of empire. I know Rhonda hasn't been, you know, really the nicest person to the rest of the people, but he's just got to realize that the stable was set with these girls, you know, really kind of establishing the sport. And then she realized, oh, my God, you know, we can actually do this. I can actually do this and make money. And then she became popular and took it to the next level. Kind of very similar to Chelsea, you know. I mean, Chelsea did take it to the next level. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting chaotic. I mean, it's not just in comedy, but just everything. You know, it seems like that happened right around the early times of the millennia. That kind of revolution came. It was kind of I want to say second sexual revolution, but it was a time in which women's roles changed again. Where they were, so we're still kind of seeing that right now.
Yeah, and I love it. I think it's great. I think it's great, like that. You know, there's like these big groups of women comics that are all good friends with each other, and it's like it's nice to see because like one group knows the other group, and we're friends with that group too. You know, it's almost like a musical. It's like West Side Story. It's like, hey, there's the other group. You know, but there's it's not there's no rivalry. Really, there's no like, you know, I'm sure there's always people who hate people for whatever because comedians are very unforgiving. Like you're pretty dead to someone pretty quickly in comedy because we're a sensitive bunch. But it's nice to see that, you know, the groups of women helping each other, you know, like I mentioned Pretty Funny Women all the time, but it's so successful and it's made so many people really terrific careers. And these women are all stay friends and then they form their groups and we watch these groups go on to do all these amazing things, and a lot of them come from that class, including Chelsea Handler, including Natasha Leggero. She came from Pretty Funny Women, and it's really cool to see that, to see how well they're doing, and because they were always really funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Like I said, it's great, and it's there's so much diversity now in terms of this comedy stage now too, and they're realizing that there has to be, you know, so. And it's been interesting because, I mean, obviously Netflix has more comedy specials now, so there's more outlets that way in terms of comedians getting their material out. It's very kind of an interesting time right now in terms of being a comedian as well. You know, are you always, you say you go once in a while, but, you know, do you ever hang out with any, some of the comedians and kind of, get back into – learning a little bit, you know, in terms of how everything's going in terms of the comedy world. And, are you still learning a little bit about, you know, new things every day about comedy?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you never stop learning. It's constant. I've learned a lot, especially sort of taking a backseat for a while and writing for other comedians and watching them grow. It's made me a better comic because I see more what the audience sees. And it's kind of taken away a lot of my fears. So I definitely have more fun on stage. Clearly, I've not been hilarious during this podcast. I feel like I've just been like, and women finally have got their funny voice. I sound like.
I never.
There's enough.
I mean, on that note, that, you know, I'd hardly ever ask anybody to be funny on this thing, because I, you know, a lot of comedians. I mean, if anybody listens to my old episodes, it's not about, for me, it's never about, you know, putting on a show for you guys. It's about learning the craft. And I'll ask a lot of other questions about, you know, about the craft. And I did that the first time I think I had you on the show, and the first time I had Sean on the show. And, you know, you know, I think for me, I mean, that's been the enjoyment about it. And I've had a couple of people that actually did call in and ask questions about, you know, the craft. And, you know, I kind of feel that that's an aspect that a lot of people ask about. And I just love doing that. I'm the type of guy that wants to find out a little bit more about the craft, and, you know, and you guys probably get tired of having to go on and be funny all the time, you know, on a lot of these podcasts.
No, you know what it is? It's second nature. It's especially a comedian who's constantly doing comedy. It's kind of like, if you're not being funny and you're not on and you're not doing your thing, it feels strange. It feels weird to you. So, like, even when I'm working on a show, like, sometimes I'll find myself just being, like, that goofy person, like, in an office, like, you know, which is okay in TV, because half the staff on a TV show that has comedians in it, or I do a lot of prank shows, hidden camera, half of them were comedians at some point, or they've worked with comedians. Like, it's really comic heavy in those rooms. On this last show, I think I was the only stand-up. No, there were two of us. There were two comics who worked backstage, who worked on creative on Separation Anxiety, a couple of us. And I think there was, one guy had done a little stand-up in the past. But the others were just straight-up comedy writers, and really good ones, too. We had really good writers. And so it's never strange to have those people in the office playing goofs on each other, messing around, playing silly videos. You know, just kind of, you know, during downtime, a writer's room can be a really fun place. I've learned a lot of things in writer's rooms. Some of them I don't want to repeat on this show because they're burned in my brain and kind of ruined my life. But I've seen some pretty weird shit working with comedy writers. They like to go for shock and kind of stick things. And it's like, you're not going to believe this. And they always want to top each other. You know, like, one guy I worked with, his wife is Swedish, and he's like, oh, there's this fish, and it's illegal. You can't travel with it because it smells so bad. And I forget the name of the fish. And he goes, yeah, here are these videos of people smelling it. And apparently it's rotten, and it's been rotting for so long that when people smell it, they all start dry heaving and throwing up everywhere. So this video ran for like 15 minutes in our office of people dry heaving and wanting to throw up. So finally, some of us were just like, I'm going to throw up. Like, someone in here is going to throw
now,
up.
Now, did,
like,
did he record this, or was it something he found online?
No, they're online. It's one of those things where they go, we're going to open the can and see what happens. And people were, like, retching.
Yeah.
They were so taken back by the smell. And it's like things like that. And then my husband goes, how was work today? Like, what'd you do? I'm like, well, we got a couple pranks done. And then, have you heard of this fish? You know, like, I come home with things like that. So it's fun.
speaking of which, I mean, you know, I know I looked up your interview database page real quick, and I wanted to ask you about this. You've done actually a couple roasts since I think last we spoke. You know, obviously that's got to be a lot of fun to be able to do.
Oh my gosh, roasts are great, especially when they're. You know, the roast I do is mostly, it's half comedians, half rock stars. So the first one I did was the rock and roll roast of Dee Snider. And it was on live TV, which was a little risky, but it ended up being a lot of fun. It's really fun to write roast jokes for people who aren't comedians, which was my first experience with a roast. I had a writer's assistant job 15 years ago on Jeff Ross's very first roast that he did on MTV, and I worked for him. And I got to write a little bit of stuff with the head writer for Jennifer Love Hewitt. So it was, you know, it was not a comedian. And it was fun because she wasn't too mean, and the jokes were light, and they were clever. We couldn't get her to make fun of herself, unfortunately. But it was fun. And the roast was of Carson Daly. And of course she was his ex-girlfriend. So they also had another ex-girlfriend come up and roast him. And that got a little awkward, but when you're working with non-comedians, they're just so afraid of being mean and not funny. They're afraid of the audience not laughing at every single joke. So you have to write things in a way where even if no one laughs, maybe people applaud to give them that sort of cushion that they're not used to, because comedians are used to dead air. We're used to a joke falling flat. We just move on to the next one. That's why on roast sometimes you just go boom, boom, boom. And, you know, one joke goes flat, but you don't even remember that one because they've already moved on to the next joke and that joke killed, you know? So with our comedians on the roast, it went really well. We did have a little struggle with the non-comedians, but everybody came through in the end and it ended up just being a lot of fun. One of our guests got offended by one of the jokes. We didn't see offending her. That was written by a writer that wasn't working with us, who was hired outside by one of the presenters, and got really upset and almost walked off the show. So that was a little scary. We had to go and talk her into coming back and sitting the rest of the time, but she was pretty upset. And when it got time for her roast, she was so nervous. Some of the best jokes on the whole show we gave to her because we knew as the only woman, everyone was going to be tough. So it didn't really work out the way we wanted. So that was a little hard. That was a tough day. But Dee Snider was thrilled. He had a ball. He loved the roast. Zach Wilde was great. And all the comedians, Jim Norton, Jim Florentine, Craig Gass, they were amazing. That was fun. The live TV was a little bit scary, though, because we couldn't edit any of that stuff out. It's just all there. So roasts are usually really long and then edited down quite a bit before they're aired on television. Maybe they won't do that again.
Well, Comedy Central doesn't. I don't think they usually tape it. What they usually tape it the weekend before, then they edit it through the next week, I think, and then
they edit
it
quite a bit.
Like through, yes, quite a bit.
Yeah,
quite a bit of it is edited. You can tell. Some people fail absolutely. Some people you expect to fail absolutely miserably is absolutely great, and then some people that do you think you're going to do absolutely great sometimes do absolutely horrible. Martha Stewart, whoever wrote for her deserves an Emmy, because that was absolutely unbelievable.
Mike Ferrucci. I think his name is Mike Ferrucci. He's one of my favorite writers, and he writes for all those roasts. I know he wrote the Cloris Leachman one because I asked him because it was so good. But I bet it was him. I mean, he's just
Mike
that guy.
Deserves
he's
an
so
Emmy
brilliant.
Because that was good. That was so
it was.
Good.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. If you guys haven't seen it, please look it up. I think it was Bieber's. It was the Bieber roast, and it was Martha Stewart. That was actually really, really funny, and great for Martha Stewart to have a sense of humor like that. You know,
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was so cool of her. I mean, yeah, that the fact that they got her to be okay with joking about that, because that's the hard part is approaching the person who's not a comedian and go, can you make fun of yourself? You know, and for her, it's like, you know what? Let me get off this giant pile of money for a second. Yeah, sure. Let me walk by these, you know, Macy's with all my shit in it, my 500 books and my cookingware line and my 50 restaurants and hotels. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, no problem. You know, but you approach someone who's maybe, you know, it's hard to roast someone who's not really, really famous because comedians try to do this. And when you do it, and I've been a part of these, and you're roasting someone who's not really, really famous and is still struggling to make a name for themselves in their career, and you tell them some unflattering truths about themselves, it's really damaging, and it's not funny, and it ruins friendships. I've seen it happen. And it doesn't really work as well. It doesn't work as well. So they got to be really okay with who they are and how famous they are. And we thought everyone was. In this last roast, and one person, I can't figure out why, because this person is so beloved and so famous and so has such loyal fans, just choked, and it was tough. It was a little too sad. But that didn't happen in the next roast. The next roast was kind of crazy and kind of got off the charts and was a lot more fun, and everybody kind of loosened up in that one. Those guys could take a joke a lot better, I think, in the environment it was in, because it wasn't on live TV. It was recorded and then edited down for Sirius Radio, but it was performed at a big music festival. So the reviews for the second one came back a lot more positive. I think the live TV and breaking for the commercials and how it was a large group at a convention, it was at the NAMM show. I think all of those things kind of coming into play, like, made it not as light. You know what I mean? It got a little heavy at points, ran a little long, and then, of course, that one incident. I don't know why I'm talking about this. Isn't that terrible? I'm talking about the one wrong thing that happened on all the shows I've done in the last 10 years. Here's the one wrong thing that happened. But I guess it's interesting to know, you know, I mean, that this kind of stuff happens. Like, that two people, literally, we almost, like, fainted in the back of the room as things were going down. It was really stressful.
That reminds me, I was watching the documentary on CNN of Steve Jobs, which is a really good one. You know, they took both in the high road and low road both, which was interesting. But they would talk about Steve Jobs doing a presentation and the writers being in the back, and every time a certain segment, are you there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
Every time a writer would get past a segment. I mean, when Jobs went through a segment without messing up, they would take a shot. so that was pretty much the same thing. They were on pins and needles, waiting to see if Steve Jobs liked it or screwed up or anything messed up. And if it went okay, then they took a shot, basically. So they're pretty much hammered
by the end of
the situation. But yeah, it kind of reminded me of that story. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of thing that was, well. Actually, you've been writing in Hollywood for quite a while now. I mean, are you thinking about, you know, getting to that point where, you know, you could start start your own show or start writing, you know, kind of your own show or being a head writer somewhere?
Oh, well, I've been a head writer most of the shows I've worked on. I was on the roast and a bunch of hidden camera shows that I've worked on. And currently I'm executive producer and head writer for a hidden camera pilot that we're shooting in Vegas. And I've also created my own hidden camera shows that I've been pitching for the last 2 years. So I'm definitely doing this. This is happening. Trying to get things sold, that's tough, you know, but I'm working with some terrific people, especially this pilot we're doing right now in Vegas. We have unbelievable talent attached to this show, including a very big name from HBO that we just locked in this morning. The deal is not officially done yet. Like, the ink is not there. So we got a verbal agreement. I just don't want to say their name just in case, but we have a very, very, very big star attached to this show from HBO. So we're really excited about that. And we're going to be filming in Vegas starting next week. And also featuring comedian Adam Hunter. Are you familiar with Adam?
I've had him on my show several times. I am very familiar. I follow him on Twitter, I listen to his podcast, religiously. I guess
so
the best way to put it. And I talk to him so much. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well,
so yeah, I know Adam very, very well.
Adam's in the show. Yeah, he's in the show. He's great. Yep, he's amazing. He's in the show. Shwayze, the hip-hop artist, has a bunch of amazing songs. He had a show on MTV. He's in our show also. Jason Martinez, who's a performer in Vegas and is in a big show right now in Vegas, and he used to open for Frankie Valli. He's a tremendous talent and as an actor and performer, and he's in our show. And, we have a huge cast of just amazing people, and I'm really excited about it. We're going to be pulling some pranks out there in Vegas, doing a little hidden camera thing with these wonderful people. And
quick shout out to Adam, who's going to be at the Stratosphere coming up on Thursday. So those who are in town, please go to the Stratosphere. If you tweet him at MMA Roasted, you could probably get you some comp tickets. I think he said he had about 50, and that was a couple days ago. So you may still have a few. So if you're in town and want to go see a great comedy show, I had the pleasure of seeing his comedy show. I think the last time was during Fight Week last year. Yeah, he's a really funny comedian. Make sure you guys check out Adam. Like a really good friend of the show, really good friend of mine on Twitter too. We tweet once in a while too. So it's great to be able to hear he's going to be on part of the show. So I'll have to talk to him about that. Probably the stupidest question I'm going to ask you today. Are you going to go play any poker while you're there in Vegas?
Of course. I was just there yesterday. Of course. Yeah, I didn't have a good week, though. I played at Planet Hollywood, and I played at Harrah's, and I played at the Golden Nugget. And just tournaments, and I bubbled in two of them. So it was not very good, not good poker for me this week. But I'm going to be pretty busy on this shoot because I'm running it, and there's a lot of moving parts. So I probably won't have any time during the shoot, but I'm going to try and take a day off when we're done and relax and play some poker. Where should I go, Mark? Where should I play?
That's tough. Well, really, I don't play as much poker as my brother. My brother is always, mm-hmm. you know, he always goes in June for the tournaments to try to qualify
yep.
for the World Series. So, I think he usually plays at the Rio roughly for the tournament,
okay,
like
that's
tournament one stuff. But that's about it. I mean, do you do
that's
any of the?
I'll be.
Yeah, you'll be there too.
I'll be staying there. Yeah.
I'll have to tell my brother that he'll be around. Actually,
okay.
Me and him are actually co-producing a movie, and that's why I'm going to miss you while you're in Vegas. We're co-producing a movie up in Montana, and it is about it. Part of it is about poker, by the way.
Cool.
Part of it is about poker. So we're kind of co-producing. It's my third film. It's my second feature. My second fiction feature. I just edited a documentary and I did a film last summer, which I should tell you, both are right now they're up for selection for the Artemis Film Festival in Los Angeles coming up in April. So I will let you know on that because I'd love to see you come over and watch these movies and if you can, I'll let you know.
Oh,
in advance
definitely.
I have your email so.
Definitely.
I'm giving Sean the same invitation too. So, So I'll be in LA. So hopefully we'll catch up when we're in LA. I'll probably more than likely be down there for it. I'll let you know on that as well. And since we're not going to be able to meet up in Vegas this time around, you're just going to miss me. It'll
Aww,
be interesting to be able
that's
to
a
see.
Bummer, but it's a,
everything.
For a good reason. You're doing
yeah.
a cool thing.
Yeah,
awesome.
I think you're coming in a week from Saturday, right?
Yeah, I'm coming in on the 12th. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm leaving on the 12th. So you're just gonna miss me. It'll be interesting. So hopefully we'll catch up in LA as well. And I'll let my brother know you'll be in town for the World Series of Poker. Maybe we'll figure out something. I know. I think some of the poker scenes, we may leave until after June. So we may. I know we're looking for a couple actors. So I'll keep you in mind. We'll definitely talk about that later on too. Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
Actually, this is very vague. I can't believe I didn't bring this up. I also did the roast of Brace from Gigolo's. Braceland from Gigolo's. Shot there in Vegas. It's on Showtime. It's about the group of gentlemen who work as professional gigolos
yeah,
in Las
I'm,
Vegas.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Also...
Actually, Adam's actually a big fan of that show.
It's a great show.
He's a big show, yeah.
They're great, and they're really funny and nice guys. It was so easy to work with them. They were so nice. And so I wrote the roast. I had to write for all the guys. And it all, for some reason, ended up being more about Nick than about Brace, but it came out good. I think they did a really good job. It's like I said, working with non-comedians and doing a roast is such a different beast. And I was really impressed. These guys really pulled it out. They even, Ash was a little bit nervous, but he, at first, but, you know, but he really came through and he read the jokes and they got big laughs. And then the lovely and talented and one of my favorite people in Vegas, Jennifer Romez, who's the star of The Sexy Show, who I think is amazing. And have you seen it or have any of your listeners seen it? Have you had her on the show?
I have not had her on the show. I have not had the pleasure.
Oh, my gosh, you will love her. She does The Sexy Show at the Westgate, and it's fantastic. It's a really, really good show. Like, when she invited me, I was like, okay, I'll come. And I'd never been to a topless show in Vegas. I didn't know what to expect. But it is like a full – these women are athletes. And this is like a full-fledged performance. Like, it's really good. It's a good show. And she's funny. And she roasted also at the roast. And Shay Matasha and I wrote her roast. And she killed. And she was great. So that was a lot of fun, that roast. We did it at the Alexis Park Hotel, and it's going to be on Showtime in a couple months. The show premieres, the season premieres in a week or two, I think in 2 weeks, and then we're in the season finale. So you'll see me. I'm in it. I'm at Vin's house on Gigolo's, and then I'm there at the roast with the roast master, and we have celebrity guests who did the roast. I can't tell you who. And then, and one of them, I think you know, who's been on the show, is in it too. So that, yeah. So that was really fun. So that's coming out in a few weeks.
You'll need to give me her information so I can get her on the show at some point.
Oh, I will. She's fantastic. Her show is so good. I tell everybody, I'm like, if you're gonna go see Sexy, it's good. It's an actual like show. Because I love musicals and plays. Sean always makes fun of me because I go to like 50 musicals when I go to London or New York. That's like all I do the whole time. And I enjoyed her show like that. It was, for me, it was like a big performance, you know, with costumes and lighting and makeup and, you know, and good dancing. And that's what it was to me. And to men, it could be that too. The girls are also all really hot. They are good looking ladies. So it's a very good show.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I have to get her on the show sometime down the line as well. Quick question. I mean, have you ever done Adam's podcast at all?
No, I'm not really the roaster. I'm not good at it. I sort of sit in the back and write the jokes and hand them off to people who are funnier than me. I can't pull it off. I roasted two people. I hosted Ralphie May's 30th birthday roast because we were real close friends. And at the time, his girlfriend, who's, you know, wanted me to do it at the time. And I said, okay. And then I did that. And then I roasted Lisa Sunstedt from Pretty Funny Women. And that's the only time I've ever gotten up and done it. I don't like to do it. I like to write it, let someone else say it.
His show is really not about roasting fighters as much as a lot of talk about sex. But it's an interesting show. I don't know if you ever heard one of his podcasts, but
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I said maybe we'll do one after this shoot because I'm sure we'll have some great stories. Because hidden camera, crazy shit happens all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure you'd love that, and I'll have to poke him on that as well. Now here's the big question, another big question. I don't think you're on any social media, are you?
I am. I'm on Twitter.
You're on Twitter?
I pretty much just tweet about sports and whatever show I'm working on that I'm promoting, or once in a while poker. Sometimes I write poker jokes.
Okay, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is Court Crow, CourtCro.
Court Crow, got ya.
Mhm. And I love Vegas so much. It's my cover picture.
Okay.
Actually.
Cool. Cool. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. So I'll have to start following you. I didn't realize you were on Twitter. I'll have to.
That's okay. Most people didn't realize it.
Yeah. Now, do you watch any MMA at all, mixed martial arts?
I don't. I just worked with a guy, though. Like, when I was in Vegas, the guy that is partnered with me to go around, we had to do, like, location stuff. He's a fighter. Mm-hmm. And he was with me all day, and I felt very, very safe. He's a kickboxer, and he's got a fight coming up, like, in a few weeks. So he's part of our show. But I used to watch
What's
it back
name?
In the day when I worked on. His name is Zane Zane Barrand.
Zane Barrand. Okay, I'll have to take a look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got a fight coming up.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I haven't really watched it since I used to have to watch it when I worked on Jay Moore's sports show way back in the day, was when it first started kind of getting really hot on TV.
Okay.
And I watched it back then.
Yeah, the night before I leave, I'm actually covering a female mixed martial arts event in Vegas. So,
wow.
Yeah, and I've covered them since their inception, like 2 or 3 years ago. So it's very interesting. I was just wondering what kind of sports you've covered, but we'll have to definitely follow you on Twitter as well. It's great to be able to see all the things that are going on with you. Definitely, as soon as the show gets kind of underway, we'll definitely talk again, because I don't want it to be another 5 years before we talk again.
I know.
Yeah. So, and you know, like I said, I'll be in LA, so hopefully we'll catch up in LA in April when hopefully both my movies premiere worldwide. Hopefully that'll go around. And yeah, it was great to be able to catch up with you. You know, I always love our conversations. They always go in so many different directions, and they're always so much different. So,
because I have no attention span. I'm like a 3-year-old, Mark. That's why. And on to the next thing. On to the next thing. Oh, I had a question for you. Is it okay if I give an email? Okay. So, so we're doing this hidden camera show. The pranks are not mean spirited at all. They're very fun. At the end of our pranks, we want people to go, "Oh my God, I can't believe! Are you an actor? You were so good! I totally believed you!" Like, we want that kind of reaction, not people going, "Fuck this! I'm gonna," you know, and freaking out, because it's not funny when it gets like that. So, really fun, silly pranks, of course, a few starring Adam Hunter, and we would love it if you want to set up a friend or a family member or a loved one. Or even if you want to appear in one of our pranks as like an extra, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff Wednesday afternoon at Container Park. So if you happen to be in the area and you want to walk by, one of us might grab you and pull you and make you a part of the show. So if you want to come by then, or email us at whathappensinvegasshow@gmail.com. Whathappensinvegasshow, make sure you put the word show, at Gmail. And we'd love to hear from you, and hear from you soon, because we've got to start setting these up.
Yeah. So yeah, do so. I mean, it's gonna be a fun time. And if you have seen any other of Courtney's prank shows, you know, it is they're really a riot. Yeah. Some of the things that you and your staff come up with is just absolutely hilarious. So it's great to be able to see you shooting here in Vegas. So I will, I will talk to you soon. Really
thank
great
you.
To be able to catch up with you. I know I've got really to say the truth. I'm taking next week off, and then the week after, I've got Sean and Susie Wang, actually both are coming on the show. So
it's great show.
Really, yeah, great show. So I have them two coming on, following. So great for you to kind of tee up the ball for next week, 2 weeks from today. So. But yeah, I'll definitely talk to you hopefully in April when my, like I said, my movie hopefully premieres down in Los Angeles, and we will talk to you soon.
You bet. Take care, Mark. Thanks again.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Courtney Crone, everybody, at Court Crow, C-R, and it's Court and then C-R-O on Twitter. You know, whathappensinvegas@gmail.com. If you have friends that you wish to set up for a little bit of a prank, so make sure you guys check that out as well. With that in mind, we will be back in 2 weeks. Like I said, we'll be off next week. We'll be back 2 weeks from there. Sean Pulaski, one of our favorite guests, is going to be on the show, and Susie Wang is going to be coming on, talking about her upcoming show, upcoming movie called A Weekend with the Family. Really great to have some of these comedians come back to the show. Like I said, Courtney, it's been a while since we've had her on, so great to be able to see that. Please check us out on Facebook and Twitter at SWIV, at SWIV on Twitter, and Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook, and check that out as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern with Sean Pulaski and Susan Wang. Talk to you then.